A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Här kommer ett meddelande från Food Pharmacies samarbetspartner Simple Feast. Simple Feast är en vegetarisk och vegansk mattjänst som levererar 3 måltider i veckan där man endast behöver lägga ner 10 minuter. Sen är maten klar att servera. Vi ska titta närmare på deras meny för kommande vecka där det bland annat serveras en mustig växtbaserad gulasch med len potatispuré som är full med färsk timjan och rosmarin. För att balansera smakerna blandas en syrlig rödbetssallad ihop med kaprisvinägrett och rostat bovete. Dessutom kan man njuta av kikärtor i en len kokossås som serveras ihop med en sallad på savojkål, spenat, dadlar, pumpakärnor, färsk mynta och citrusdressing. Höjdaren i denna måltid är den bakade auberginen med saffransdressing som får vem som helst att bara vilja ha mer. Så varför inte låta Simple Feast ta hand om nästa veckas måltider? Läs mer och beställ din Simple Feast-kasse nu på simplefeast.com/foodpharmacy. Slut på meddelandet.
Hej Mia.
Hallå Lina.
Jag ser på dig, du är så glad.
Alltså jag sa just det, det ska bli så kul att spela in podd nu och låtsas att man
mår bra
när man har liksom suttit i tågkaos i 45 minuter, har en son med halsfluss med sig, en valp som bara ylar. Min man är bortrest i 10 dagar. Ah, men det är verkligen livet Lina, det är kaos.
Jag vet, du pratar med rätt person.
Och jag vet ju att det är minst lika mycket kaos. Du har väl just fått samtal från skolan och din dotter är på någon
skidresa
och har kräkts 2 gånger på vägen upp. Och du, för 17, du var ju själv på skidresa och kom inte hem. Du var ju där i 2 dagar extra för att alla tåg var inställda. Du ringde ju mig med panik efter ett dygn och bara undrade om du någonsin skulle komma hem till Stockholm igen.
Nej, alltså jag skulle kunna ägna ett avsnitt åt SJ. och det skulle inte vara det här avsnittet finansieras eller sponsras av SJ. Det skulle nog vara tvärtom, så att vi skippar det avsnittet.
Ja.
Det var inte SJs fel för att det var snökaos, men så dåligt som de har skött det här. Mm. Och noll kommunikation och så många timmar som vi har suttit i kö för att få information om hur vi ska komma hem.
Fy.
Utan att, och det bara läggs på i örat.
Ja, vidrigt.
Strunt vilket, som tur var så fick vi någonstans att bo i alla fall. För vi hade ju lämnat stugan som vi hade hyrt. Så vi hade ju ingenstans att bo.
Nej, dessutom så ni stod ute och frös i minus 25.
4 barn och minus kallare än någonsin. Strunt vilket, det här leder faktiskt mig in på en väldigt bra sak. Och det är nämligen att ofta när man känner att nu har jag fått nog. Det kan ju vara med mat eller med att man inte tränar eller i sitt äktenskap eller i på en arbetsplats där man inte trivs. Så leder ju det till att man inser att jag måste göra en förändring. För jag mår inte bra i den här situationen. Jag måste förändra någonting i mitt liv. Och varför då berättar jag det här? Jo, jag skulle kunna komma in på ett helt avsnitt om det här. Men nu är det ju så intressant att idag så ska vi få lyssna på en intervju som du och jag har gjort.
Mm.
Och vi har faktiskt haft förmånen att få träffa en av Storbritanniens mest inflytelserika och respekterade husläkare. som heter Dr. Rangan Chatterjee. Jag vet inte hur man uttalar det. Det är då ett indiskt namn, men på engelska. Mm. Och lite kort innan vi började den här intervjun så var det så att för cirka 5 år sedan så kände sig den här Dr. Rangan väldigt uppgiven. Därför att han kunde bara hjälpa cirka 20% av sina patienter. Och de flesta av hans patienter, de hade liksom de åkommorna som är vanligast att vi lider av idag. Migrän, diabetes typ 2, depression, krånglande mage, sömnproblem, övervikt, fibromyalgi. Sånt som vi överröses med mail på vår blogg om varje dag. Och i bästa fall så kunde han ge dem en kostnadskrävande symptomlindring. Och där är vi inne på någonting som verkligen berör oss starkt. Därför att det förstår ju alla människor att det i längden inte kommer att fungera. Och en dag så kände Dr. Rangan att han tröttnade. Så istället för att slentrianmässigt skriva ut mediciner så började han på allvar rota i orsaken till patienternas tillstånd. Och då märkte han att nästan alla sjukdomar som folk uppsökte hans hjälp för bottnade i livsstilen. Och han reste till experter över hela världen och sen skapade han helt enkelt en enkel metod för att hjälpa patienterna att ta kontrollen över sin egen hälsa och ändra sin livsstil. Och idag då så botar skillnaden idag mot för 5 år sedan är att Dr. Rangan botar majoriteten av sina patienter tillsammans med patienterna själva. Det är ju ändå väldigt intressant tycker jag. Och han menar på att vi måste vidga begreppen inom sjukvården, också någonting som vi är inne på och pratar mycket om friskvård och hur man ska förebygga sjukdomar via en bra livsstil helt enkelt. Så nu så lutar vi oss helt enkelt tillbaka och hoppas att ni kommer tycka att den här intervjun är lika spännande som vi tycker att den är.
Och jag är alltså kvar i det här rummet. Jag har bara lyssnat väldigt intensivt på Linas. Exakt så mår jag, på Lindas instruktion. Tack Linda. Över Tack. Till intervjun.
Kära lyssnare. Den intervju som ni nu ska få höra på är enligt mig vansinnigt intressant. Och den är på engelska och innehåller ett och annat medicinskt fackuttryck. Så varför inte damma av ert gamla lexikon och tryck på paus och slå upp om det blir för svårt? Eller bara vara modern och gå in på translate.google.com. Hur som helst, ha det så trevligt.
Yes.
Cool. Well, you ask me anything you want.
Yeah, we have we have many questions, but
fine.
I think
I can talk, so don't feel shut me up whenever you want.
And to be honest, one of us have read your book, and that is Lina. Fine. I haven't had time to read it, but she briefed me, so I know basically the whole
I've
book.
Not read all my author's books so, either
but,
when I interview
but
them.
But if so. I, you know, if I ask you a weird question or whatever, don't
then we just
be...
cut it out.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get it.
No,
I
but
also
you understand
do a podcast,
what I mean.
I totally get it.
Okay,
believe you me.
And okay. Now I will bring it home after this podcast.
So I think it's nice to introduce you. We don't, I mean, our podcast is very informal because
so
we're very informal people, but still you are, I just wrote down that you are one of the most known GP in Great Britain right now, but there are many people in Sweden who might not know who you are. And you could say that you started a revolution in your country when it comes to lifestyle-related diseases. So could you just tell us a bit about how this all started?
Yeah, so look, I've been a doctor now for nearly 18 years. So, you know, I've seen tens of thousands.
You look 18. So young.
It's all the lifestyle, okay? But I think we also qualify early.
It's a healthy way of living.
You look like you're 18, so.
Well, no, I hope so. I hope so. But, you know, yes, it's nearly been 18 years since I've been seeing patients, which is remarkable, really. And in that time, I've realized that actually the tools I learned at medical school are really good for some of the problems that I see. But for many of the problems I'm seeing, they're just not that helpful. And I've realized that, you know, the bulk of what I see now as a doctor, as a GP, 80% of what I see is in some way related to our collective modern lifestyles. Mm. Now, I'm not putting blame on people.
No.
Right? I understand that it's very difficult these days. You know, life is busy, it's stressful, there's junk food everywhere, our jobs require us to sit down all day and look at screens and computers. So, you know, I'm not putting blame on people, but I've realized that lifestyle drives so many of the problems that I see, yet the tools I learned at medical school were how to diagnose and how to treat with pills.
Mm.
Okay. And I realized that, you know, a few years ago, I was sitting in my practice at the end of the day and I looked back at all the patients I'd seen. It was maybe 42 patients I'd seen that day. And I thought, how many people have I really helped today? And I honestly thought it was about 20%.
Mm.
I thought the other 80%, yeah, I've done something. I may have given them a prescription. I may have referred them somewhere. But I felt I was just putting a sticking plaster on their problem and not getting to the root cause. So, you know, that was a big turning point for me. But I think, if I'm honest, that the big point for me was when, this is just over 8 years ago now. So my son was 6 months old at the time. And my wife had been breastfeeding him for 6 months. And we went to Chamonix in France for a holiday.
I've read about this, yes.
Yeah, and I remember that we were staying in my friend's chalet and my wife called out to me because my son had stopped moving. His arms went back, his body went rigid, and he was just vacant. And she called out to me. I ran over. I thought that because he'd had a cold that day and he had a lot of mucus, I thought maybe he's choking. So I turned him over. I slapped his airway on his back to see if that would clear his airway. Nothing happened. And my wife said, look, we've got to get to hospital now. And so, you know, we rushed to the hospital. You could see that the doctors were really worried because he had no temperature. He wasn't moving. He got moved to a bigger hospital. They had two lumbar punctures they did to see if this was meningitis. And we were panicked. We thought we may lose him that night. And a few hours later, what transpired is that he basically had a low level of calcium in his body that was secondary to a vitamin D deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, my son nearly died from a preventable vitamin deficiency. And I, as a doctor, I used to be a specialist. I've got an immunology degree. Then I moved to general practice. With all my qualifications, I was unable to prevent that in my own son. And there was a lot of guilt attached to that because I felt very bad that I wasn't able to protect him from this thing happening to him. And modern medicine saved his life, right? So he had low calcium. They gave him an infusion of calcium. He's fine, right? Mm. But nobody taught me, well, if he's been low in that vitamin for the last 6 months and maybe when he was in the womb, that's a critical nutrient for his immune system. Mm. So maybe that's why he's got bad eczema. And I thought, well, no one's teaching me what to do and how to fix and repair some of the damage that may have been done. Mm. They just fixed him and say, yeah, you can go now. Mm. And I thought, right, I'm going to find out what's happened, why it happened, and what I can do to get my son back to full health as if this had never happened. That was the sort of promise I made to myself. Mm. And I became obsessed for 3 or 4 hours a night. I'd read nutrition. I'd read about vitamin D. I'd read about the immune system. I'd read about the gut microbiome, all these gut bugs that live inside us. Mm. And I thought, wait a minute, there's a lot of science out there that I'm learning that as a doctor, I know nothing about, that I haven't been taught. And I applied that science. And my son now is a thriving 8.5-year-old boy who's well, his skin is clear. Okay, he's doing great. I applied the same principles with myself and my family. We're all feeling great. And then I started applying those principles with my patients. And I found that I've never had to prescribe as less medication as I do today. But
that's
I still use
it. Wonderful. Yeah.
And so that was really, you know, that's a very shortened version of my journey. And so today, basically, I'm a big proponent that nutrition and lifestyle is very, very important and impacts not only obesity and type 2 diabetes, which everyone always talks about, but also things like headaches, migraines, gut problems like irritable bowel syndrome, even things like mental health problems, depression, anxiety. Lifestyle plays a huge role. And I think we're over-medicating a lot of these patients by giving them pills. Sometimes that is indicated, okay? I'm not saying it's never indicated, but I think we're overdoing it.
You mean that we should seek for the root of the problem instead of on trying to solve the symptoms?
Yeah, exactly. And you'd be surprised, but as doctors, we're actually not taught to find the root cause of a problem. Mm. We're taught to diagnose the problem. What's the problem? What's the name we give to that problem? Mm. Once you give it a name, you can then go down the treatment pathway.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, that works very well for acute problems. If you have a pneumonia, right, that works great. You go and see your doctor, you've got a problem, you're coughing, you may be coughing up blood. The doctor, you know, does some tests and identifies, yes, you have got a bug in your chest that's causing this. I will give you a pill that will kill that bug. And then after a week, your problem's gone, right? Modern medicine is brilliant at acute problems, but I don't think it's quite as good for the chronic problems that are literally putting all healthcare systems under strain.
Yeah, and that is actually the biggest problem today in our world of in our part of the world. You told us about your son. We've actually written down a question about vitamin D and how much do you think that we could prevent? I mean, I don't mean in figures, but in this part of the world, the lack of vitamin D is it's big during this season.
Yeah.
And there are some countries like in Austria where you get subsidies from the states to get extra vitamin D as a supplement.
It's really interesting that because in that French hospital where we were with my son, they said to us, we've seen this three times in the last 3 years. It's always a British child on holiday. And what's really interesting, I've spent a lot of time in Chamonix. I've got a lot of friends there. And in France, all pregnant women know that as soon as they give birth, they have to take vitamin D, right? If they're breastfeeding their baby, they have to take 4 drops, right? So each drop has got 300 units, but if they're breastfeeding, they take 4 drops. If they're bottle feeding, they only take 2 drops because formula milk has been fortified with vitamin D. Yeah.
Mm.
So they have no rickets. The extreme case of vitamin D deficiency is rickets, where your bones don't develop properly, which is what happened to my son, right? And they don't see it in France because they've got a very robust policy that all children get vitamin D from a young age. I think the same as in Germany, I think, and in many other countries around the world.
Also in Sweden.
That's fantastic. And we have that guidance in the UK, but nobody's following it. Mm-hmm. It's not known about. I'm trying to raise awareness of that. Mm-hmm. As a doctor, I wasn't aware of it, okay? And so the cases of rickets in the UK at the moment are going up, which is staggering. You know, it's a Victorian illness that is now going up in the UK. You say, you know, we're here sitting here in Stockholm recording this podcast in, what, February now. In the UK, you only get the right amount of sunlight to have the right wavelength to make vitamin D in your body between May and September. I imagine it's the same here, if not
or
shorter.
Or even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets dark at 3 o'clock in December.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, it's quite controversial for some people. But I'm slightly biased because I've seen the problems that vitamin D deficiency can cause in my own family. But I think vitamin D is one vitamin we should all be considering taking. Particularly in the winter months, particularly if you're living here in Sweden. I think it's, you know, it's an important, it's called a vitamin, but actually it's a hormone, the way it works in the body. Mm. Yes, it's critical for your immune system, for your bone strength, for so many things in your body, vitamin D is critical.
Mm.
You can get a little bit from foods, you know, from animal products, but it's very hard to get full amounts unless you're taking a supplement, really. You had to eat a lot, for sure.
But what is your reflection about criticism against supplements? Because I don't know how it is in Great Britain, but I think it's more common to read about the threat of overdosing vitamin D than not taking.
Yeah.
So why is it like that? Because that really scares people. They think that they are not afraid of drinking Coca-Cola and having crisps every day, but they are actually afraid of taking a natural supplement because they think it's not good to overdose it.
You know, you raise a brilliant point, really good point. And I think there's a natural skepticism within the medical profession of supplements, which I don't agree with, actually. I think it's very misplaced. And we'll come on to that, but to overdose on vitamin D, you have to take so much. Mm. You have to take about 50,000 units a day, right, to start getting to the levels where you're going to overdose. So you can overdose, but it's pretty hard to. Mm. And I think more people are at risk of a deficiency than an overdose.
Mm.
And I think, you know, we've really got our values slightly misplaced in society where in order to prevent an overdose, we're going to let whole portions of the population be deficient.
Yeah.
Which I find ridiculous. So, you know, you can always get your levels checked at your doctor and see, are they in the optimal range? That's a very simple way of doing it. But I think for most of us, really in the winter months, taking something like 2,000 units or even 4,000 units a day is not going to overdose. It's not going to cause any problems. Mm. You know, it obviously, different people deem differing amounts. I've got dark skin.
Mm.
Right, so if you've got dark skin, you probably need a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, people with dark skin need much more sunlight to make the same level of vitamin D.
Mm.
And so I think it's got to be personalized, but I think that, you know, yes, you can overdose, but it's a very low risk.
It's just a reflection that we often get the question about, isn't it dangerous to take supplements if you don't know if you need them? And I think it's very important to raise the issue that that it's a bigger risk to many people to have a deficiency.
Yeah, and look, there might be some supplements where people are taking when they don't need to, okay? Mm. Look, I think it is very hard because in the UK, the supplement industry is unregulated, mm. whereas the medicines are regulated. Mm. But we try and throw everything out together just because it's unregulated. There are actually some very good quality supplements there as well
mm.
and some poor quality ones, mm. right? But just because the industry is unregulated, it doesn't mean we shouldn't take any at all.
No.
It just means we've got to be discerning. We've got to start understanding which are the good ones and why might we need to take them.
Mm.
So I wish doctors got more training on supplements because I think they can be incredibly beneficial for many people.
Mm. When you started to try to dig into the root of the problem, the core problem, why do so many of us suffer from lifestyle related diseases today, and how can we help them? You traveled around and you met a lot of experts,
yeah,
and then you formed like a model containing four counterparts.
Yeah.
It's rest, exercising, sleep, and food. And in your book, you start with rest. So is there why do you start with this counterstone?
Okay. So the reason I start with rest and relaxation at the start of the book is because I think it's probably the most undervalued area of health in the 21st century. I think, of course, food is important. And I touch, you know, I cover food in the book. And you know, you guys have written books on food. You know, food is very... It's common that we think about health, we think about food.
Mm.
But I don't think we think about rest and relaxation. And stress is a big problem these days. Stress is what the World Health Organization call the health epidemic of the 21st century.
Mm.
Right? Stress is very toxic for our health. And that's why I remember, you know, I think many people in the UK expected my book to start with food because I've spoken a lot about food before. But I started with the relaxation part of the book on purpose to really grab people and say, hey, relaxation is important. It's equally important for your health as what you put in your mouth. And so that's why I started with that one. Why I think it's such a big issue now is because the modern world, particularly in the last 10 years with phones and technology, it has really changed the way we live our lives. And, you know, for many of us now, it's simply very hard to be healthy. In fact, for many of us, it's a revolutionary act to be healthy in this kind of toxic modern world in which we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
And many people find it too hard. So the default setting is to be unhealthy. And I've realized actually, as I mentioned, that it's not only the, you know, too much weight or type 2 diabetes, it's also the little things which really affect us, migraines, headaches, gut problems, mental health problems. There's a lot of research coming out now how food, for example, can help our mental health,
mm.
how exercise can affect our mental health, how sleep deprivation can cause mental health problems
mm.
and be used as a treatment. So this is not just soft medicine on the side, you know, people, or a bit of lifestyle, you know, but let's get to the real medicine. No, I say for the 21st century, lifestyle is the real medicine for most of the problems, not all of them, right? I'm still very proud to be a doctor. I'm still very proud of the tools that I was taught. They can be life-saving in many instances. But, you know, I always try and use lifestyle where I can. Can I give you an example? Right. At the start of the book, I mentioned a story about a 16-year-old boy.
Yes, with who, the screen that you give not to.
So this is a boy who we call Devin in the book. And he came to see me a few years ago in practice. And I was, you know, busy 10-minute appointments. So Monday afternoon, I was already had three patients waiting outside. I was running late. And the 16-year-old boy walks in with his mother. And I look at the computer screen. I look at the notes. And I see that on the Saturday, he ended up in the emergency department. He tried to harm himself. The psychiatrist had seen him, had reviewed him, and said, okay, he's safe to discharge, but wrote me a letter saying, dear Dr. Chatterjee, can you start him on an antidepressant when you review him? So a medication. And he walks in with his mother, and we have a little bit of a chat. And I think, why is... I know this family. They seem quite well balanced to me. I've seen them several times over the last few years. Why would the 16-year-old boy try and harm himself? I can't just put him on an antidepressant until I understand what's been going on. So I spent time talking to him. And as I was talking to him, I started to get the impression that actually the amount of time he used social media, I was concerned that that was impacting his mental health. And I said, look, Devin, yes, I can start you on a drug, but look, I think I found a few things in your lifestyle that may be contributing. Would you like me to try and help you? He said, yeah, sure. I said, look, I think the way you're using social media might be one of the contributing factors here. And he goes, okay, doc, what can I do? I said, well, look, why not for the next week, for 1 hour before bed, why not switch your phone off and switch off, you know, don't go on the internet and don't go on social media. Okay, so he comes back 1 week later. I say, how are you feeling? He said, look, I'm still not great. I still feel low, but something's changing. I'm sleeping a bit better and I'm less up and down in the day. I said, okay, how about we do 1 hour in the morning as well then? Okay, he comes back again, a little bit, feeling a little bit better. Over the course of 6 weeks, we changed that to being 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening. And bit by bit, he's starting to feel a little bit better. He's still not great, but he's starting to improve. And about that time, I read a big study that suggested that actually the food we eat can play a role in our mood. I thought, I wonder what he's eating. So I asked him, I said, what are you eating? And it was like a classic 16-year-old boy, lots of junk food, lots of sugary treats. You know, he was feeling hungry every 2 hours and he'd snack a little bit more. And I said, look, Devin, when you're feeling hungry every 2 hours, it's because you're eating high sugar foods. Your blood sugar's going up and then it's crashing down again. Now, when you feel hungry, that's not just a hunger issue. When your blood sugar drops, your stress hormones, adrenaline and cortisol in the body go up, and that can impact your mood hormones.
This is what you call nutritional stress in your book.
Yeah, exactly. And I said to him, did you know that? He said, hey, doctor, I had no idea. And I said, look, if we can give you a few foods that just help stabilize your blood sugar, you probably won't feel as hungry and you probably won't have this mood going up and down. Now, he didn't completely overhaul his diet to being a whole food organic diet. No, he made a few simple changes. He had a protein-rich breakfast, so he'd have eggs for breakfast instead of a sugary cereal. And he took nuts with him to school so that when he was feeling hungry, it would just keep him full and keep his blood sugar stable. Right? And I was saying, let's see what happens. Now, I then didn't see him for a few months, right? He didn't come back. And that's not uncommon in medical practice. We don't always manage to track all of our patients because we're busy, right? 6 months later, I came into my practice. I was going through my mail and there was a letter. And I opened the letter and it's from his mother. It said, dear Dr. Chatterjee, I just want to say thank you. You've completely changed Devin's life. He's a happy child.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Now, he's engaged at school, he plays sports at the weekends, and he's got a lot of friends now. I just want to say thank you.
That's so nice.
Yeah, and that taught me how powerful lifestyle is, because that is a boy who at 16, right, he was at a fork in the road. He could have been labeled with depression and put on an antidepressant, and almost certainly still to this day, he'd still be taking it, okay? But instead, he took another fork. We had an opportunity to teach him how the lifestyle choices he was making was impacting his health. Mm. And then he learned by changing them, he can improve the way he feels. Now, he now is empowered. So if in the future he goes downhill again, he knows what he has to do. I'm not saying that works in every case, right? Sometimes people do need medication, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that case illustrates beautifully how powerful our lifestyles can be.
You talk about this in your book, and you write that it's important to have a new vision for the healthcare system in order to empower patients to take control of their own health. I wonder, in Great Britain, is this provocative? I mean, have you received a lot of criticism from colleagues or journalists? Because in Sweden, people get quite provoked when you talk about, mental health and depression and related to lifestyle. It's like people think that you try to blame someone, but even though it's not blaming, you try to help someone to see that there are other ways than just medicine. There are several ways.
I think you bring up a really, really great point. And the first one is about the whole thing about blame. Right, so whenever I talk about this, and hopefully you've seen that when you read my book, is that I take a very kind and compassionate tone towards people. Mm. I'm not blaming people. I'm trying to help empower people. People understand that lifestyle affects their weight. They don't understand, or many of us don't understand, that it affects our mental health. And so what I'm trying to do is raise awareness and say, hey, look, you may not realize that actually A, B, and C might be contributing. And look, I just want to be very clear that there are other factors in playing a role in our mental health as well. Some of people have had emotional trauma, which has impacted their mental health, and all kinds of other things. So I don't mean to say everything can be cured using this approach. I'm just using that as an example. But is it provocative? I think it's a little bit provocative. When I first started 5 years ago, when my first TV series came out, where I went into patients' houses, I lived with them for 4 to 6 weeks, and I helped some of them reverse their conditions, but all of them improve just by using lifestyle. I think a lot of people were a bit taken aback, and they were, I got a bit of abuse on social media saying, what are you doing? Oh. This is not, and I found that hard because I thought, hold on a minute, I've just helped this person who's been sick for 10 years on medications and the doctors can't get him better. Yeah. And I've helped them in 6 weeks and I didn't understand why people would attack me. I was really confused, but I've understood that actually it's so alien to certain ways of thinking this. But I've got to say, recently, for the last few years, I've not really. In fact, the medical profession seems to be embracing this. Mm. I've created a brand new course, the first course accredited by the Royal College of GPs, called Prescribing Lifestyle Medicine.
Really?
Where I teach doctors.
That's so good.
And we trained 500 last year. Maybe we're going to do 1,000 this year. Not just GPs, cardiologists, psychiatrists, endocrinologists. Great. And they're using these principles now with their patients. And, we've had a lot of demand now, even from Stockholm. Mm. Some doctors have contacted us saying, look, can you come and teach this over here? So if we can get enough interest in Sweden, we're all going to come out and try and teach doctors here. Because once doctors understand the science behind this, they want to use it.
Exactly.
But at the moment, they don't. I'll give you an example, right? Give me an example. Food and mood, right? 2 years ago, February 2017, there was a trial that came out in Australia, a randomized controlled trial that showed that diet can improve depression. First time we've done that, okay? Mm. So they took 67 people who've got moderate to severe depression and they were already on treatment. half of the group were put in a group where they changed their diet to what's called a modified Mediterranean diet. Mm. The other half were put in a social support group. After just 12 weeks, the group who changed their diet, 32% of them had gone into remission. The other group, only 8%, right? Mm. So that was very, very significant. I lectured in front of some doctors maybe a year and a half ago. There's 200 doctors in the room. I said, when you are seeing patients with mental health problems, how many of you talk about food? And 5% of them put their hand up. Then I gave them a 20-minute presentation on all the new science. I said, how many of you are going to now talk to your patients about food? And they all put their hand up. So the point is, there is science out there, but it hasn't permeated into medical training. So the reason doctors are not bringing this up, A, they're not taught about it and they don't know how to. And that's what I'm passionate about changing, is to show people there is science about it, but not only science, right? If we think about one of the basic principles of being a doctor is the Latin phrase, primum non nocere, first, do no harm, okay? An antidepressant, right? On the side effect list on an antidepressant, it will say on every packet, rare side effect increases your risk of suicide. Mm-hmm. Right, so that is a documented side effect of an antidepressant. Mm-hmm. Okay, I appreciate it's rare, but it's still a documented side effect. Mm-hmm. So there is a downside to potentially prescribing that drug. Yeah. Right, mm-hmm. So I would say, why don't we use harmless interventions first? Why not try changing someone's diet and see how they feel? Mm-hmm. And a lot of us assume, oh, a patient won't want to change their diet, they don't want to do it. Well, really, I haven't found that. I have found when you treat your patients compassionately, when you explain to them why you think it might be helpful, and you help them structure it within their life, I find most patients want to do it, right? Now, I'm not saying some patients don't need an antidepressant straight away because they're really, really sick, right? I always say that because I don't want to be misinterpreted, right? But I think often we're not using lifestyle enough, and it really can be very powerful.
When you talk about food, you also talk about intermittent fasting. This is something we have written about and talked about quite a lot.
And also lived after.
Yeah.
So what do you guys do?
We actually, I was a person who ate the moment I woke up. You know, I just put something in my mouth and that was...
Snap.
That was the reason I basically went up in the morning, because I was so tired.
Because of your... toast.
Yeah.
You were longing for your toast.
Yeah. And then the last thing I did before I went to sleep was to eat. And bringing up science, it's really important, of course, all these studies. But also, I think that we tend to forget in this society that even though science is important, we still know within us empirical data. And from when I changed my lifestyle, I mean, I can just say that I don't need any studies to prove that I'm so much better after I've changed my diet and I've changed other parts in my lifestyle.
You don't need someone else to validate that for you. You know it's working for you, right?
And that's the best ambassador, I think, because you can help other by just telling
that. Yeah, and my goal with every single patient, right, is to help empower them so that they understand what the choices they're making are doing to them. Mm. It's the same thing, like, let's say on a Friday evening, right, a group of people get together, they have a few drinks in a bar, okay? They're having fun on a Friday night. They know that on a Saturday morning, they might have a headache and they won't be able to do much on the Saturday morning because they'll have a hangover. But they're doing that in the knowledge. On a Friday night, they know that's going to happen, but they're doing that with the knowledge. They think, I'm going to get enough enjoyment out of the Friday night to put up with the consequences. Mm-hmm. I want to do the same thing for lifestyle with my patients. I want them to understand that, let's say, food is improving their mood. Once they understand that, if they choose not to do that, okay, I'm okay with that, because people should be allowed to do what they want to do. You know, I don't tell people what they should do with their life. I want to empower them so they understand. And I find when patients understand it, then they think, yeah, you know what? I kind of like eating well because I feel good. Mm. And when I don't eat well, I don't feel so good. Ah, maybe I'll start eating better, right? Mm. That is much more likely to be long-standing.
Yeah, for sure.
The reality is there is science there, but I do think we sometimes as a society, and even as a medical profession, we put too much emphasis on what the science says. Because science, I must tell you this, you know, I've been seeing patients for 18 years now. Science guides what I do, but it doesn't dictate what I do. Mm. And the reason is, trying to get somebody better in front of you, it's not just science. There's an art to medicine. There's an art to getting people better. And you have to blend the science with the personality in front of you. Mm. Not all the science is relevant for the guy in front of me. Mm. And so I've learned that this comes with experience. How do you use the best science and make it applicable for the person in front of you? And, you know, the recommendation I make in the book is this on the intermittent fasting is what I call a 12-hour eating window. Mm. So you can get more aggressive than that. But I say that there's a lot of research now saying that if you eat all the food you want to eat, if you eat it within 12 hours, you get benefits. Your immune system functions better. Your blood sugar control is better. You will lose weight simply by not changing what you eat, only changing when you eat. Mm. And I think 12 hours is achievable for people.
Yes, for sure.
Now, you could say, can I make it 10 hours or 8 hours? Sure, some people could. Mm-hmm. But my approach is a bit different. I say, look, if you're getting 12 hours, give yourself a tick and move on to something else. Mm. Instead of trying to go in one area and really max it out, I think 12 hours is going to be achievable for people long term. Mm. I don't want them doing 8 hours for 1 week and then flipping back to 15 hours. Mm. And so I think that's why this book has done so well around the world, is because it's quite achievable.
Yeah, achievable.
It doesn't feel too much.
And it sounds like you work a lot with baby steps. Like take it step by step. Don't change everything overnight.
Yeah, because look, my own personality is, and this I 5-6 years ago, you know, I thought, oh, I'm going to change everything. Diet, movement, sleep, everything in one go. Right, and that's great. We can all do that for a few weeks, but often we just then flip back afterwards.
Yeah, I know. Done it.
Exactly.
Myself.
And so the approach that my recommendation with anyone listening to this podcast is, think about these four key areas with your own health: food, movement, sleep, and relaxation. Mm. Which area do you think you need the most help with?
Yeah.
Right, and start there. Pick one easy thing there. In fact, let me ask you two: which of those four pillars? I know you guys are interviewing me. I'm sorry,
because
I'm
used to you. But come on, I know you told us you have a podcast of your own. Yeah, so I
can't help it. But I'm always intrigued. Out of those four areas, which one do you think you struggle with the most?
Before it was food, but as we've changed it already, I would say I struggle a lot with stress at the moment.
Yeah. Me too. That's
so
the one for me.
So I need relaxation.
Yeah.
That is the one for me as well. Mm. And I think this is why we've gone into that area more and more. Yeah. And this is why I was so happy when I read your book. And this was the first thing you brought up. Because I told Mia on our way here that I feel cheated by our culture.
You said you felt cheated by life.
Yeah, but I mean, I meant is by our culture, because I was taught to really, you know, that life was, you need to achieve things. You should never rest, you know, that you should just go for it and you should be best in school. And then you go to university and then you study really hard and you get a job and you shouldn't lie down because you shouldn't be lazy and all these things. So I've been like, follow this book. And
for
I thought
40 damn years.
Yeah, for 40 years. And I thought I was, you know, best in class, basically. I thought I've done this by the book and soon I will get a reward or something. But then I woke up and I was like 41, like I'm now. And I felt, no, someone has cheated me. Because the only thing I didn't learn was how to take it easy and just breathe and just, you know, enjoy what's
life.
Happening today. No one told me. And that's, I was just thinking, I told Mia, how could all these people that surround me that are 50, 60, 70 years old, why haven't they told me that stop running, you know? Just relax, because you might be dead tomorrow and you will be dead earlier if you stress like this.
Such a serious issue. And I've got to say, there's so many personality traits that you're talking about yourself, which are identical to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I could almost relay the same story back to you from myself. You know, I also have been driven like that my whole life. And I realize actually resting and relaxation is just as valuable as anything else we do for our health. Mm-hmm. And arguably, it's never been as important as now. Because I think even 15 years ago, I think you could get away with that kind of lifestyle because there would be some natural rest there. Mm. I really do think the last 10 or 15 years, particularly with technology and social media, it's changed everything, where we are wired the whole time. Mm. One of my top tips for people, and it's something I've been using with a lot of my patients who struggle with stress, but also who struggle with anxiety, is a breathing technique that I came up with in my practice a few years ago called the 3-4-5 breathing technique. Mm-hmm. And basically, you breathe in for 3, you hold for 4, and you breathe out for 5. Mm-hmm. In fact, we can try it if you want.
Yeah, sure.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so
sure,
I'll count perfect. It. So,
we love breathing.
As it's your podcast, we do what you want us to do.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. Okay.
Now it happened again.
Okay.
Okay.
So, okay, breathe in for 3. Mm. 2, 3. Hold for 4. And breathe out for 5. Okay, so how do you feel after one breath?
I love it.
Yeah, because...
I fell
just
asleep.
Just one breath.
That's one so breath, nice. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's one breath. It takes 12 seconds. Mm. 5 rounds of that takes 1 minute, okay? Yeah. Anytime you breathe out for longer than you breathe in, you have to switch off the stress part of your nervous system and you have to promote the relaxation and rest part of your nervous system. Mm. Okay. There are many other great breaths out there. This is the one I came up with in clinic because I wanted something easy to remember that people couldn't get wrong. I've got a teacher, one of my patients is a teacher, works with special needs kids and gets really stressed out. And at lunchtime, we'll normally have 5 cigarettes just to deal with the stress. Mm. This is a few years ago. And I said, look, why don't you try some deep breathing at lunchtime? He laughed at me at the first time. He said, breathing, what's that going to do? Okay. Mm-hmm. But bit by bit, I introduced this into his life. And now, a few years on, every lunchtime he goes to his car, he does this for between 3 and 5 minutes. He sails through the afternoon, right? The stress doesn't affect him because he's lowered his stress response at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And then he's also told me he's closer to his wife because he goes home in the evening in a much better state of mind than when he's wired and ramped up all day. Mm-hmm. And I've now, unfortunately, had to start teaching this to children. Mm-hmm. Students, adolescents who are having too much pressure being put on them at school, who are getting stressed out. Mm-hmm. And this breath can be done anywhere. You can do it on the train. You can do it in the car. You can do it anywhere you want. It doesn't take long, right? Mm-hmm. It's really powerful and it's free, right? So that's, you know, for people at home who are listening to this, I'd encourage them to... You know, if you're suffering from stress or anxiety, you know, try 1 minute of deep breathing like that.
Who isn't today?
Who isn't? I mean, exactly.
So please do this now.
Mm, I'm doing it now.
No pressure, but do it. Mm. But talking about that, about the listener, because what I feel when I read about, you suggest to have
screen-free Sabbath.
Screen-free Sunday.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
Sunscreen. Sunscreen on Sundays.
Yeah. Mm. Screen-free Sunday. Mm. And what's bothering me today, it also has to do with me because I have 2 children. And I feel that I try to, you know, activate them so they not spend too much time in front of the screen. And when I see small children, you know, today they sit and they have their screens and some, you know, they sit for a whole weekend and immediately when they come home. So how should we as parents think when it comes to screens?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. It's something that many of us as parents are very concerned about at the moment. Because it's such a new technology, so we're still learning more. I have my concerns. I think we should be limiting screen time on children. Personally, that's my view. I've seen it cause a lot of problems in my practice. And whilst we're waiting for more science and research to come out, I think I would urge caution. But the first thing I'd say is that, you know, my children are 8 and 6. So I've only been a dad for, 8.5 years now, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there are people listening who've got much more experience than me as a parent. But one thing I've learned in 8 years of parenting is that kids don't really do what you tell them to do, they do what they see you doing. So the uncomfortable... Yeah. Well, I think we all, you know, I think kids are a great mirror reflection, because often they start exhibiting behaviors that you think, oh, you know what, that's kind of my behavior. And they just picked that up from me.
You're
and,
right.
it helps. It's one of my biggest motivations to change my behavior is actually when I see something I don't like about myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming back at me from my children. Then I think, well, I can't really tell them not to do that because they've just seen me do that.
Makes you a better person.
I think it does. I really think it does. So I think we've got to model that sort of behavior in front of them. If they see us on our screens all the time in front of them, they're going to think that's what I want to do. And that's the hardest thing, because, you know, screens are made to be addictive. You know, you talk to people in tech companies, as I have, they say, you know, we're very cautious with our kids because we know how addictive this stuff is. So, you know, the first thing is we've got to model that behavior ourselves. Another thing I think is really good for kids, it's not directly to do with, well, it's sort of to do with screens. So I'd say make mealtime screen-free times, right? I think mealtime should be something where we put screens away. And I really, you know, sometimes, I'm sure my wife wouldn't be happy about me saying this, but sometimes I think she'll look at a screen at, you know, at dinner time, she'll want to like order the shopping online or something like that. And for me, I feel really strongly that, you know what, we really, we've got to make mealtimes sacred. We've got to switch off the screens. There's got to be like a connection time for the family. So I think having no screens there is really important. And then the other thing we do, which I, again, has been life-changing for us with our kids, is we play a gratitude game every dinner time. So we're not particularly religious. There's nothing to do with religion. This is, we go around the table and we all have to answer three questions. What have I done today to make somebody else happy? What has somebody else done today to make me happy? And what have I learned today? And it's incredible what that does, because as humans, we're naturally drawn to the negatives that have happened. This helps reframe your mindset to the positive. And there's lots of scientific research now showing you that gratitude, a daily practice of gratitude, helps your physical health and your psychological health. And, you know, last week my daughter came back, we were playing it in the evening, and she's only six, and she said, oh, Daddy, today... Annabelle opened the door for me at lunchtime and kept it open as I walked through to the playgrounds. And it's such a small thing, but it's helping to teach the kids at young age, how do you look on the positive in life?
And she saw it.
Yes. And they're getting better at it as they play it.
Exactly.
And, you know, if I'm honest, I introduced the game. I thought this would be great for my children. I've got to say, it's pretty damn good for me and my wife as well, because I'm like, oh, yeah, life is pretty good today, actually. So, again, I'd encourage people listening.
And you save a lot of money if she's shopping. She used to shop while you were eating.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's good. So both ways.
Win-win.
No, I think that is, I do that game when we go to bed. But I ask them, what are you grateful for today? And, you know, and we share with each other. And to me, that is very important, because I want them to go to sleep with, you know, what can I...
happy thoughts.
And just to bring the good from the day to the next day or to their sleep.
I love
that.
So
I think it's so important to do that.
And there are so many different ways you can do it. You can do it your way. You can do it the way I've... You know, and all these things can be personalized to an individual family. It's not about following someone else's. It's just trying to give people ideas. And I know in the UK, since this book came out, so many... families, a lot of mothers contact me on social media and say, I can't believe how much my kids love this game. It's changed our family dinner times. And so I'm really happy to know that these tips, and that's just one of them, but all these tips are being used by people all around, well, all around the world now, to help them improve their lives, which is really exciting.
That is really good, actually, because I often feel that people don't know. I mean, when you talk to children, it can be so... What did you eat today in school?
Tell me about
it. Exactly. That is the most common question.
When did you go home?
Did you bring home your homework?
Because you just want to start a conversation.
Exactly.
And then you...
They look at you with blank faces. Oh, nothing. What did you do today? Nothing.
They hate that kind of questions.
Nothing. All day you did nothing?
So it's very good to find a way to have a like deeper conversation.
Yeah,
because
100%.
That leads to another... question,
level,
hopefully. So actually we will recommend everyone
to read your book.
Oh, thank
we
you.
We think it's, I mean, she will soon think it's very good. It is very good, I can say. And we will also write on it on our blog.
Oh, thank you. That's incredible. I really appreciate the support.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. And we hope that you, when you come back to Sweden, you will be a guest again.
I'd love to be. With pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you for having
so
me.
So nice to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Not at all. Nice to meet you both too. Thanks.
Om ni vill veta mera om denna fantastiska doktor så kan ni gå in på drchatterjee.com. Ja, jag tar det långsamt. drchatterjee.com. drchatterjee.com.
Så, du har ju, precis som du sa också, läst hans bok, Fyra nycklar till ett bättre liv. Hälsoobalansen. Fyra nycklar till ett bättre liv. Vad tyckte du om den?
Du tar det en gång till.
Nej, det här är jätteroligt. Vet du varför? För den heter inte hälsoobalansen. Nej. Den heter hälsobalansen. Det säger någonting om din state of mind.
Sa jag hälsoobalansen?
Den heter hälsobalansen faktiskt.
Åh, men visst är det skönt att man ändå får vara människa och inte skämmas över det. Jag har ändå kommit dit
jättebra
i livet. Ja. Det är nog min, det var en klassisk Freudian slip. Det är min hälsoobalans jag ville ge uttryck för. Den här boken Hälsobalansen som jag borde läsa, men inte har hunnit eftersom Nej. Vi delar upp sådant jobb mellan oss och den här längsta stråt drog du den här gången. Mm. Vad tyckte du om den?
Alltså, den är helt fantastisk. Men för mig så handlar ju också den här boken... Du kan läsa många böcker under ditt liv. Men att få rätt bok vid rätt tillfälle är ju någonting som inte alltid händer. Utan jag kan ofta gå tillbaka och tänka, den där boken skulle jag nog uppskatta nu i livet.
Stor igenkänning.
Hälsobalansen är ju, när den kom till mig så kände jag att det här är precis vad jag behöver, därför att jag har de senaste åren haft arbetat väldigt mycket med en del av min livsstil, men jag känner att det är någonting som skaver, och det här sätter då Dr. Rangan verkligen spot lighten på. Ja. Och han lyfter ju fram precis det som jag känner att jag söker efter i mitt liv. Mm. Nämligen stillhet och tid för mig själv. Mm. Och reflektion och eftertanke.
Jag kommer sno med mig den boken nu hem. Är det okej?
Okay? Nej.
Nej, du kommer aldrig släppa den.
Nej, du får köpa ett eget ex.
Ja, och min bok då, Hälsoobalansen, den kommer att släppas mars 2020. Så håll utkik efter den. Ja. Så ja. Nu ska jag rädda mitt barn från halsflusen, blir svårt, men jag ska rädda mitt barn, min hund, dig, alla. Åka hem och kurera alla.
Låter bra. Jag kan i alla fall avsluta då med att jag rekommenderar alla Hälsobalansen av Dr. Rangan Chatterjee. Den är så bra och någonting jag tror att de flesta, som jag känner i alla fall, skulle må bra av att läsa.
Perfekt.
Tack.
Ses vi nästa vecka.
Hej.
Hej.
Du har lyssnat på Food Pharmacy-podden. Hurra! Medverkande var som vanligt Mia Klase och Lina Närtby, och dagens gäst var Dr. Rangan Chatterjee. Jag heter Sebastian Ring och står för klippning och med hjälp av mitt band Celeste även för musiken. Dagens tips är att gå in på vår blogg foodpharmacy.se och sedan hitta oss på Instagram under namnet food_pharmacy. Hej då!
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.